Hey folks, welcome back to the Visual Studio 2013 launch event. I'm Dan Fernandez. I'm gonna be your host for a very exciting event. We have Habib Hadarian. Habib, why don't you quickly introduce yourself?
Sure, I'm Habib. I've been in Visual Studio for at least 10, 11 years right now, and I work on .NET.
So the big thing is we are talking about .NET development, and for folks watching online, make sure to get your questions in. If you have questions about, you know, future of .NET, what's new in .NET, and specific feature questions, Habib is the guy to get them answered. So we're going to try and stump him in the next 30 minutes and make him really uncomfortable. It's going to be great. So first thing, .NET developer, I'm a .NET developer. What's interesting for Visual Studio 2013?
Well, Dan, I got to say, it's a very exciting time to be a .NET developer right now. If I can categorize the set of experiences and features that we've done in .NET 4.5.1, I would categorize them as developer productivity, application performance, and this thing that we're calling continuous innovation. Let me start with developer productivity. We've done a whole host of features along 64-bit support for it and continue.
Can we just pause? Because that's awesome and like the number one thing. So now I won't get the, you must be in 32-bit to you can actually edit and continue.
Exactly.
Love
it. That dialogue has been banished for good now, no more. We've also focused on experiences that we've now improved upon. So in .NET 4.5, we introduced async, for example, and we've got a host, a bunch of feedback from customers saying, hey, you know, I love async, but debugging async code is really hard. So now in, with .NET 4.5.1 and Visual Studio 2013, you can debug your async code a lot easier, where you can easily see, for example, what your call stack looks like and which methods called which other methods, as well as if you look in the actual tasks window, you'll see exactly the state of the various tasks as well. And then last but not least, one of the most common requested features for .NET is the ability to see the return value for managed methods. So that is where, imagine you're stepping through your code right now and you have a method call.
Right.
And today you have to step into it and then basically step all the way to the method to the end and then step out again. But
right.
Now you can simply step over that and in your debugger window, you actually see the return value as well.
Yeah, so is that in basically immediate window that I'd be able to see sort of the return on the method? Or how does the user use that? I'm in Visual Studio, I'm inside my method, I'm going to say return false.
Right. It's in your locals window.
So locals,
exactly. But also you can use the actual immediate window by
calling the method and then I'd be able to.
Exactly. And then on the application performance side, Dan, we've invested in a gamut of things. So we have a new feature called ASP.NET App Suspension, which is a great feature for both essentially enterprise IT shops as well as website hosters. And that's the ability where if you're hosting a number of websites on a machine, for example, and when there aren't any requests to a particular website, we'll essentially, I'm going to call it, dry freeze the website, so to speak, in a ready-to-go state. And
okay.
Then as soon as the next request comes up, the app is up and running. So what will happen is, as far as the end user is concerned, it's a much, much better experience because the application is that much faster.
So you mentioned it's an end user experience,
right.
And just to drill into that
right.
one specifically. So, you know, say I have an internal website that, you know, it's the expense reports website, I do stuff,
right.
I want to be able to use it. I want to turn it on so that way, like, if there's a bunch of demand, maybe expense reports are only done on, like, Fridays,
right?
And there's another website that wants to take up demand.
Right.
If the first person hits it, what's actually happening? So it's, my site is suspended.
Yes.
It then wakes up. Is there like a latency going on there, or
it's a minute latency compared to what happens today? What happens today, Dan, is essentially in IIS when, let's say, your ASP.NET website times out, for example. There's a verb where you terminate the website. That means the next request that comes in, Dan, it actually has to rehydrate and spin up the ASP.NET worker process again, and then be able to serve the request. Because with the ASP.NET app suspension feature, we are essentially keeping everything as is and keeping it ready to go. When the request comes in, we don't actually have to then re-spin up the ASP.NET worker process, then be able to serve the request itself. So it's a
okay.
big difference where you're no longer the user is no longer paying that upfront cost for just starting up the process.
Yeah,
right?
So with some people sort of called cold start versus warm start.
Exactly. That's a great way to actually think about the problem.
And I guess for people who don't know, do you want to just kind of quickly explain the difference being like cold start, it kind of has to do everything warm start. And maybe you've seen this before in Visual Studio, like I have it up and right. I do file new project, or it's the very first time I'm doing it in file new project. Those are kind of the differences. So just getting ready to stump you. This is
okay,
gonna be
here we go. All right.
So we have our first question. Saurabh Jain, hopefully I got that name correct. What's new in .NET for multi-threading and security? So you hinted at some of the stuff around async, but multi-threading and security specifically.
So as far as .NET is concerned, what we've done is we've continued to invest in improving the overall security of .NET. For example, if you look at the Windows update releases over time, as we have seen any security issues in .NET, we've continued to address those things as the issues come up, or as we've actually proactively looked through our code base and discovered, you know, there's a better way of doing this in terms of security is concerned. As far as threading is concerned, I would say our main investments around making things more performant.
Okay.
So as far as the developer is concerned, you're not going to see any new surface area. It's not going to be a difference. But essentially, we've done what I call fundamentals work, which is very low-level work as far as the runtime is concerned.
Meaning I don't have to change my code, it just goes faster.
Yeah. Well, one of the mantras that we have in .NET 4.5.1, Dan, and this is something that I think is going to be an enduring theme. Mm-hmm. In the future in .NET 4.5.1, what we want to do is make a statement to our users, our developers, and our customers is that your app just gets better.
Right,
by
right.
upgrading to the latest version of .NET. And when I look at features like a ASP.NET app suspension or things like the SQL connection resiliency feature, that's exactly that type of statement where you don't have to do any work. You might have to configure something in iOS, for example, when it comes to the ASP.NET app suspension. But as far as your code is concerned, Dan, we'd like customers, and we've received a ton of feedback, that just because I have a new version of .NET,
right.
you know, don't make me go and change a whole host of things to be able to take advantage of the work that you guys have done. So that's a theme that you'll see us over and over again continue doing.
While we're on the topic of fundamentals, and there are a couple more questions that I want to get to, but breaking changes. So obviously, like if I'm a previous version, I want to upgrade to 4.5.1. You know, what are some of the like tenets, if you will, that you have around breaking changes, or is it like, hey, upgrade and we've ensured that this will just work?
Yes. One of our core promises around .NET 4.5.1 is very, very, very high compatibility.
Cool.
In fact, let me share with you, Dan, how we got here. So back in, I'd say March, April of this year, I had a whole chunk of my team just go and talk to our customers, ask our customers to evaluate the early bits, mm-hmm. and give us feedback. This is 75 of the largest enterprise customers that you can imagine, right?
Awesome.
So the bits have been through the grinder many, many times, so to speak, and we got early feedback. We fixed those issues, and the reason why we need to make a very high compatibility bar promise, Dan, is .NET 4.5.1, similar to .NET 4.5, is an in-place update. Mm-hmm. Meaning, you know, just because you went from 4.0 or 4.5 to 4.5.1, you cannot break customers, obviously.
So right,
we do extra due diligence to make that happen. So our essentially stance right now is, look, we are promising customers that .NET 4.5.1 will have an incredibly high bar as far as compatibility is concerned. But if customers do find issues, we have a whole host of channels. Our MSDN blog, we have our Facebook presence, we have user voice and so forth. Please send us feedback
and
we'll make sure that we'll get back to you.
Yeah, and certainly we're hearing pretty loud and clear in terms of user voice
right.
too, which I do want to get to some of these questions.
Okay, great.
These are some awesome folks. So Nicholas Peterson asks, Lambda's in immediate window, coming anytime soon. How's that?
Okay. When we were doing the 64-bit and continue feature, the thing that really we found out, Dan, and this is it's something that's both across the languages as well as runtime, is that over time, as languages have evolved, mm-hmm. really when you think about the debugging experience as far as .NET is concerned, we've lagged behind somewhat. I mean, 64-bit and continue, and managed term value is a great example.
It was the last time you were in Visual Studio.
It was exactly the last time. So now that I'm back on .NET, one thing I can pretty much promise folks is that we are going to catch up as far as the, you know, edit compile debug cycle is concerned for .NET apps. So great. When you are in Visual Studio, really one of the hallmarks of .NET, Dan, is productivity is the bread and butter of .NET, right? So we need to make sure that we continue investing to support our language and our debugging experience in the IDE. We don't have that in .NET 4.5.1 right now, but it's something that is right now on our backlog, literally.
Okay, so one, it's something that is known,
right.
And that,
yes.
that you all are looking mm-hmm. at. Another very similar question, and it's almost the same question. Romain Carter, are we ever going to be able to trace over link in the immediate window? So link in the immediate window, I understand. Tracing over, I don't know if that means using trace statements or effectively just being able to do quick link from where select
yeah,
in the immediate window.
If the question is, for example, you want to enter a multi-line link statement, let's say, in the immediate mm-hmm. window, it is something that we're looking at. Unfortunately, I don't exactly know what this statement trace actually means in the immediate
right,
window.
Right.
I don't want to give you the wrong answer that I actually know what that means.
Because trace
is.
Actually, I think of trace.WriteLine.
Yeah, so. Yes, exactly. So
okay, so that's fair. Next question. Thomas, what new feature are you most proud of? Ooh, this is a great question. It's like okay. You have a bunch of children, now you have to pick your favorite.
This is it is exactly that analogy, Dan. But I guess the one that I'm going to pick on, I love the developer productivity features in Visual Studio. But one thing that absolutely excites me is this feature around the SQL connection resiliency.
For Entity Framework, yeah.
Exactly.
Give kind of like the quick overview
sure.
for people who
by
don't
the way,
know
it also applies for ADO.NET as well. So it's for EF and ADO.NET.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Oh, great, great. But the
scenario is this. As developers migrate essentially their backend more and more to the cloud. And when I say backend here is specifically the database. One of the things that becomes absolutely crucial is connectivity. Mm-hmm. Because what happens is, imagine you have your end users walking around with a device where you can't guarantee connectivity, so to speak, right? So in turn, you have to write all this boilerplate code in your app to make sure, you know, as the user interacts with your app and connectivity
right,
goes
right.
on that, for example, you reestablish the connection and
intermittent
and so
latency
forth.
Issues.
It's an excellent point there, Dan, as well. And so what we've done with this ADO.NET or AEF connection resiliency feature is the fact that when you host your database now in Azure, we automatically will retry a connection when it fails, right?
Right,
so
right.
Imagine instead of your end user now getting an unhandled exception saying the connection's timed out, right?
Right.
We will basically determine that there was a timeout and mm-hmm. we'll try the connection, then magic happens. As far as the end user's concerned, it's like, wow, this just continues working, right?
Yeah.
And I love, and the reason why it's my favorite feature is, .NET, because it's all about developer productivity, I love features where we just, you know, say, you know, we take on the burden of the hard work, right?
Right.
And as far as developers are concerned, you know, they should have kind of the least barrier of adoption when it comes to adopting a feature like essentially SQL connection resiliency. So that's
love
out.
It. Awesome. XAML TOE asks, are there any improvements in startup time, working set, et cetera? So you talked about some of these fundamentals.
Right.
But it'd be great, like, do you have some either numbers or things that you specifically looked at, working set or some of the maybe garbage collection things or startup time in general?
Startup time, as our fundamentals work is broad, means it's cross-cutting, right? Mm-hmm. So when we do work, it benefits everything at least a little bit.
Right.
But as far as performance specifically is concerned, Dan, a couple of features that we have done is with multi-code JIT, for example. So this
right.
is for your ASP.NET websites, where today, if you have more than one core on your machine, ASP.NET sites don't take advantage of that when it comes to multi-core jitting.
Right.
So as of Visual Studio 2013, it's actually built in your project templates as well now, where
awesome.
ASP.NET websites automatically take advantage of multi-core jit. And we've seen improvements in startup time up to about 15% when it comes
awesome.
To as well.
So real quick question there.
Yes.
I have an existing ASP.NET
yes.
website. I upgrade my service to 4.5.1.
Yes.
I have to put a setting then in my project to take advantage
there is
of
a,
this?
There is a setting to make that happen, and that is now documented on our blog. So if you go to blogs.msdn.com /.net. That's all spelled out.
D-O-T-N-E-T.
Exactly, T-O-N-E-T. And that's you'll find out what the actual, it's a very slight change to your project. But again, one of our things then is we would love our developers to make as few changes as possible when it comes to their code, right?
So sure,
your code just, you know, suddenly your users get a much better experience because you upgrade it.
Yeah, it's great, especially if it's such a small change for an existing site and all of a sudden 15% improvement is amazing.
Right, right.
So more questions here. All right, here's another more thought-provoking one asked by Tony. What was the hardest feature to incorporate? So what is, you know, what kept you up at night?
What kept me up at night? Let me see. I'm going to pick on 64-bit and continuum. And let me tell you why, Dan. So if you look across a particular experience in Visual Studio that has to do with .NET, you have to incorporate the .NET runtime, the .NET framework, the languages, and the tools. So, DevDiv in Visual Studio is a very, very large team. So having to coordinate an experience that spans the gamut of those teams, it's quite challenging because you basically have to handshake with everyone, make sure that everyone understands what the requirements are, what the scenarios are,
right.
And to make something like Edit and Continue, where as a developer it's like, huh, it just works, so to speak, right?
Right, right.
It takes an incredible amount of energy to make that happen. But
so every time I step into or step over, I'll make sure to be like, thank Habib. This is great.
So that's really the things where we have to coordinate across and sometimes all the way into the various platforms like Windows and Windows Phone as well. It is making sure that everyone's on the same page and we're delivering the best experience. Because you can imagine, Dan, you light up three or four of those scenarios and suddenly the fifth scenario isn't quite up to snuff yet. The entire thing just buckles down and kind of, you know, falls apart. So, those are, I'd say, the most challenging one.
Okay, great. Some more questions coming in here. Robin, what is the state of Project Roslyn? So that's more a language service team, but do you want to do you have a sort of like a quick update there? Or do you feel like you could talk about it? It's more a language service team versus...
It is definitely more language service question. So, I'm not gonna, I guess, break into jail then by saying something that I don't have.
I will, that's my tolerance. Sure.
But as far as I'm concerned, that's still going on very, very strong.
Okay.
And you know, whenever the team is ready to share more information about it, I'm sure they will as well. So.
Okay. Got some more questions, of course.
Sure.
Jeremy Alves asks, let's go with an embarrassing question.
Okay.
I just want to pause there and get you scared, but it's not that bad. Any word, I think he means any word, on the C# native or project end compiler projects.
Okay. So I guess for the benefit of everyone, I'm going to set some context here. So this morning in Soma's keynote in New York, I believe it was Orville who showed a demo of Fresh Paint, which is one of the hero applications on Windows.
For Windows Store apps.
Exactly,
sure.
Exactly. Running on Surface RT 8.1. And it showed a before and after experience. And the after experience was based around a new native compilation technology that we're working on. I'm not gonna throw around the code names, but I think that the thing I want to really highlight, Dan, is that this, even though this might seem new, it's been a journey for us.
Okay.
If you think about it, you know, we've had native compilation around for a long time.
Engine
has been around for a long
for
time.
Sure.
You know, we had Engine, then we added Auto Engine, and in fact, if you also look at it with Windows Phone, we introduced the idea of cloud compilation. Which again is very similar, where we take IL and essentially we compile it down to almost a native there as well. And then it's a very natural progression where, you know, we have the core technologies, we've been doing it for a number of years, we have high confidence that we can deliver this experience. So the next natural step is, you know, let's look at where we actually can take this technology.
Great.
So what you saw from Soma's keynote this morning was a very early glimpse of what that looks like. I'm sure we're going to share a lot more as we incubate and really get into this technology. But the idea is, look, what we want to focus on is how do we deliver the best experience on the device, right? Mm-hmm. And that's all about optimizing .NET for device so that it's snappy, it's fast.
And it's us doing it kind of for you.
Exactly.
You
know, again, things. It goes back to the thing of like, we want to take on the burden so that yes. developers don't have to.
Love it. Okay. Couple more questions here. Peter, so code contracts have been in the BCL for some time. However, the useful tooling runtime static checking is being shipped as extensions from DevLabs. Is this still the case for VS 2013? What are the future plans for these code contracts extensions?
Yes. I believe, Dan, that's still the case, meaning it's still shipping separately from
tooling versus tooling. Framework.
Exactly, tooling from framework. We don't have any definite plans that I can announce at this point of sure. what the plans are. But one thing that I can tell you, Dan, is this. What we are trying to look at is how do we push quality further up the stream when it comes to developer experience, period,
sure.
right? I mean, code contracts is certainly one of that experiences. Mm-hmm. More diagnostic experience, like editing continue and so forth, is more of that.
Right.
I can tell you that theme will continue. Meaning okay. With code contracts and so forth and additional features where we're going to push quality upstream further and further, you're going to see a lot more experiences, in my humble opinion, in future versions of .NET and Visual Studio where it's like, you know, it should be at the tip of your fingertips, Dan, right? It should not be that I have to launch X, Y, and Z and get to that information. And I think that's something that we are going to see more where
okay.
kind of that information at your fingertips.
Sure. A couple more questions as they come in here. James asks, in .NET Framework 4.5.1, mm-hmm. you changed the way of load and unload assemblies. We have to continue use app domains. So I guess the question is, there was a change on load and unloading of assemblies, and do you have to continue using app domains? Or can you talk about that sort of in general?
I'll have to get back to you on that, Dan. I actually...
James, congratulations.
you have stopped me. It might be... it might be something that we've literally changed in the bowels of the runtime, and I don't actually know what the answer is.
So, okay.
As I mentioned, one of our kind of social networks, if you want to post that, we'll
sure.
get back to you.
James actually probably wrote the feature and is asking okay. the question just to try and stump you.
Thank you, James.
good question. So... Wakar, I hope I got that name right. Any IIS upgrade required for deploying Site? So I think this is to take 4.5.1.
Okay.
As long as you upgrade the framework, there's nothing in IIS specifically that you need to upgrade?
The one thing I do want to point out, and thanks for bringing this up, is to take advantage of the ASP.NET app suspension feature,
yes.
You do require Windows Server 2012 R2, which comes with IIS 8.5.
Good to know. Good to know.
And when you go to our blogs, we've documented up that information as well, but as far as .NET 4.5.1 is concerned, there is no requirements imposed as far as IIS.
Okay, great. Got a couple more minutes here and want to get to two questions. So Saurabh Jain's, he's asking a ton of questions. So any improvement in garbage collection algorithm that's visible to the developer? So if, one, you all sort of have a, you know, don't touch, just trust the garbage collection yes. algorithm and just trust the garbage collector. What about, like, ways that I can control and manage garbage collection? Anything there?
So I want to repeat what Dan said. one of our mantras is that, you know, the .NET garbage collector is a well-tuned machine. So we would love our developers, take a second look at perhaps their application architecture. It might be a different issue. However, having said that, we did make a pretty significant investment in .NET 4.5.1 as well as far as our garbage collection is concerned, and that is to do with the large object heap.
Yes, yes.
So what you can do in .NET 4.5.1 is that we have seen, and this is a very, very small set of customers, and hopefully I'm not over-advertising this feature too much, but a small set of customers, Dan, they really do handle these large objects, and that's objects mm-hmm. in .NET, I believe, greater than 85K.
Okay.
And so what happens with these scenarios is that there's a time where you basically hit an out-of-memory exception because you've used up too much memory. So in .NET 4.5.1, we now have introduced the ability to be able to force a collection of the large object heap.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you have scenarios such as where you are running out of
multimedia
memory,
editing or something where you have large
or
files.
Large big data is a classic example sure. of that, right? Where people are really processing massive amounts of data and they're storing them in this ginormous arrays, for example, and so
right.
forth. So you can now essentially control the large object heap. And as I've mentioned a couple of times already, we have now documented that on our blog as well as our proper documentation. So if you just literally went to it right now, you'll see that I think it's the fourth entry down the list right now that you see that information.
Great. We got 30 seconds. Okay. And I do want to get to Dan's question just to close this up. Do the .NET team work at all with the WinRT team? WinRT encompasses a subset of .NET. Do they plan on implementing the newer .NET framework features? Do you share a code base? Like how does the interaction work between WinRT team obviously has some version of .NET you all have, and you know there's sort of probably a little bit of that going on
right.
too as well.
Yeah, my view on this, Dan, is that it really is all one .NET. And what you'll see is with WinRT, they're essentially you know projections of .NET. So as far mm-hmm. as the same experience in Visual Studio is concerned, productivity, but directly to the point there, we collaborate extremely closely, obviously, with the Windows team because that's what we really care about is the consistency for our developers, regardless of what platform you are actually targeting. So
that's great.
That's extremely important for us. So it doesn't matter if it's Windows Store or desktop or server. We work with all the various platforms inside Microsoft to make sure you developers have a great, consistent experience.
Awesome. Habib, thank you so much for taking those questions. And we are going to cut to our next video. And thank you all. Appreciate it.
Thank you.